días, bienvenidos y bienvenidas a la rueda de prensa de la película en sección oficial Croak of Gold, A Few Rounds with Shane McGowan. Para hablar de la película, tenemos aquí, aparte de su equipo, tenemos a sus productores, Johnny Depp y Stephen Deuters, y a su director, Julian Temple. Así que, bueno, antes de abrir turno de preguntas, quizá pues estaría bien que nos cuenten tanto Julian, que tiene una larguísima carrera dedicada al documental musical, como los productores, pues quizá que nos explicaran por qué surge este interés en la figura de Shane McGowan y en hacer este documental.
Well, I think Johnny should answer that first because Johnny.
As you prefer, as you like.
I've been very, very lucky to have a long, long history with Shane, you know, McGowan, and he's. Before I met him, I was fascinated by his language, his ability to make these incredibly moving, powerful songs, and was so prolific. Yet at the same time, you know, kind of being on the heels of the devil. And about 35 years ago is when I met Shane. You know, he was exactly who he has always been and will always be. He, for the first, I don't know, couple of months that you know him, insults become you realize that they're a gift, because he'll only insult you if he loves you. So in a way, I've kind of lived excerpts of this film for roughly 35 years, and I really wanted the world to be able to see definitively, and very importantly, who Shane McGowan is and what his legacy is. He's, for me, one of the greatest poets of the, of any time. If you read Shane's lyrics and go back and read François Villon, you know, the great French poet, you'll see similarities. Shane is one of those people. He's special. Mm-hmm. I think I'm done.
Julian, maybe.
Well, I did. I go way back with Shane in a different way because we shared the punk moment in time in London, along with a bunch of other guys. But I did actually do the first interview. With Shane on a little crazy half-inch reel-to-reel video that you had on your shoulder like a tape recorder, which is in the film, by the way. It's a black and white. You can hardly see it. It looks like bog roll vision, like shot on toilet paper or something. But you see him there, and he's still, you know, he's still the same guy. There is a bit, he's many things, but there's still a bit of that punk in Shane. So, you know, it was a challenge. Obviously, Shane comes with a warning on the lid. You know, he's not the easiest guy in the world to make films about. In fact, history is littered with films that have kind of been made about Shane and didn't really get there. So I think just the fact that we're here showing the film is an achievement. But beyond that, it's a film about one of the great characters, one of the characters who's pushed himself to the limits and beyond, you know, and
a true individual, a truly unique individual.
So I hope we captured some of the ferocity of his personality, you know. And his music, you know, just reaches everybody around the world, I think, who hears it. So, yeah, hopefully, I don't know if you've seen the film, but if you do, I hope you feel you get to meet this guy in all his ragged glory.
And all his charms.
Stephen, you want to add something, or...? No? Okay. Okay, thank you.
Stephen doesn't talk.
He's just there for you to look at.
Thank you.
I would like to ask the photographers to please leave to avoid too many people getting together. Okay, a question here.
I have a couple of questions. The first one is for Julian. I would like you to tell us a few words about the editing process of the film and the use of animation. That's absolutely great. And I have a question to Mr. Johnny Depp, please. I would like to hear a few words about your, if you could tell us, yes, here, about your experience with Shane in That Woman's Got Me Drinking. If I'm not wrong, you've directed the video clip. Could you tell a few words about that?
Sure. You want Julian?
First? Well, the editing, is the thing in the film like this. You actually make the film in the journey of putting it together. I like the idea of not really having a clue of where you're going at the beginning, and you start collecting archive and hopefully bits of interviews or conversations that you're lucky enough to get with Shane. In fact, we started editing before we really had a lot of material of Shane now. We had a very intensive thing of finding any bit of old cassette recording of him at 4 a.m. in a bar in Finland, or, you know, just any evidence of him around the world, you know, because he wasn't really talking to us, so we had to do that. But in a way, I think those moments are the best things, because they're such unguarded moments. There's a sense of feeling very close to him, even though the sound quality is rough and sometimes difficult to hear. I think it's part of his character, you know, you get to feel him through that slightly distorted sound more beautifully than sitting him in front of a camera and interrogating him. Doesn't work with Shane, doesn't want to do it, fair enough, you know. And the archive is obviously a big thing, you know. This is very much a film about a man who is an outsider in some ways, both in England and in Ireland, but manages to synthesize these two cultures through his songwriting. I mean, he's written great songs about London, you know, as well as great songs about Ireland. And that was very important to me, you know, to make the film, especially at this kind of Brexit moment where the whole issue of Ireland and Northern Ireland and the border is very much live again, to make a film that helps particularly young kids understand some of this history that Shane is a living embodiment of, really. I mean, he is a very proud Irishman in many ways, and I wanted to help kids, particularly in England, who really don't know what the fuck happened between England and Ireland. So hopefully the film does point that. So the archive was very important to me, to really look at everything that had been shot during the Irish Revolution through the 30s, 40s, to understand that nature of the independence struggle of Ireland. Animation is something I just love to do. If I can get the chance to do it, I mean, you can do it all in your head. You don't need a film crew or a bunch of actors or anything. You can sit there and do it with a mate, you know. I did it first with the Rock and Roll Swindle, with the Sex Pistols, made them into cartoons, which they absolutely hated. It was like, and I think John Lydon still does. It was like, we're not fucking cartoons. Who do you think we are, you know? and Sid was a kind of cartoon anyway. But now, of course, their whole band's built around cartoons like Gorillaz and so on. But at that time, it was breaking a kind of sacred thing that pop, you know, rock stars were not cartoons. But, you know, I don't think cartoons have to be meaningless. I think Tex Avery showed the way. You know, they are great surrealists who work in cartoons. They're great philosophers. So it's a beautiful medium. And when you don't have anything else, you know, there's no evidence of what you're talking about, it's great to draw it out and make it move. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, yeah, many years ago, I think it was somewhere, I don't know, 95, 96, I don't remember exactly, but I was in New York City. 94, thank you. I was in New York City, and I got this phone call from Shane one afternoon, and he said, "Johnny, do you want to make a video?" I said, what do you mean video? "Like for me, for one of my songs, I want to make a video." I went, yeah, I mean, I'd be honored, you know, to pleasure. When, what do you want me to do? "Direct it." So, which was confusing already. For Shane to choose me to direct the first single of the Shane McGowan and the Pope's record. I said, "Sure, when do you want to do it?" "Monday." It was Friday afternoon. So, like, I just said, "Yeah, let me see what I can do. I'll call you back." You know, so I called this friend of mine, got a crew together. She kind of came up with some storyline that involved Shane and Victoria, certainly, and yeah, and we had a blast. I thought Shane was going to, you know, go into hyperspace a couple of times, but he was actually, he was in great form, and I think he especially liked the fact that I wanted to turn the tables, you know, and have Shane be this very dapper, you know, super cool, you know, bar owner, bartender, whatever, you know, just looking like very suited up. And for me to look like this, yeah, a trash barrel that just rolled into the bar. So I played me.
Actually, Shane, I think, always saw himself as a bartender as an option.
Yeah. You know, he'd be a good one.
Yeah.
He'd be a great one. If the bar would be open for about an hour, people would just pass out. But yeah, so he kind of snuck that one in on me, and we shot it in a day, I think. I think we shot it in a day and edited it for 2 days and then sent it out. Fun time.
We have a question over there. Hi. Couple of questions for Johnny. Couple of questions for Johnny. The first is, do you remember the moment in which you discovered Shane's music, and what did that suggest to you when you first heard it? And secondly, what's the most craziest situation in which you found yourself with Shane?
I can't be told that one.
Oh boy. Let's see. The first time I heard the Pogues, I think I suppose it's the same feeling everyone gets when you hear the Pogues or Shane's voice and those lyrics for the first time. You know, you it kind of hits you. You've just bounced off some dissonant wall, like some strange. The sound, what it was, it was the sound of punk rock. It had the rage and the anger of punk rock, but it had these great melodies and mandolins and tin whistles and banjos and roots instruments, especially traditional Irish. And I just thought the combination of the two, you know, the combination of Yeah, that rage that he felt, but this melancholy that lived within, and the Pogues blew me away. They just blew me away. So, I was in London one year many years ago, and 30 some, and there was a guy, one of my heroes, a guy that who was a very dear friend of mine, and Shane's and Jerry O'Boyle's, and it was a guy named Jerry Conlon, and Jerry was they made a film about him that Daniel Day-Lewis, a Jim Sheridan film called In the Name of the Father. So Jerry Conlon was the guy that Daniel Day-Lewis plays in the film, you know. So I knew Jerry many, many years ago, and he brought me to London, and then we all went to Dublin together. I remember bits of it. I remember my breakfast, which was Guinness and Irish coffee. My lunch, which was Guinness and Irish coffee, and the dinner was just Jameson's or Black Bush and Guinness. Anyway, Jerry had spent 15 years in English prisons for a crime he didn't commit. He was known as one of the Guildford Four. So we were talking about, we ended up talking about the Pogues, and he says, "Oh yeah, Shane's a great friend of mine, you know." Okay, cool, well. And so he said, "We'll go see him tonight at the studio." So we went, and ironically, because just thinking of the last statement that Shane makes in this film, when I met Shane, he was, how would I put it? He was negotiating a pool table. There was a drink in this hand, a pint, and in this hand there was a guitar, like a beat up acoustic guitar. And he was teetering, balancing back and forth, trying to negotiate which way to fall. And I watched him do that for about 15 minutes. And then I was introduced to him before he fell. And from that moment on, he was, you just knew that this was someone. There are those moments in life when you go, oh my God, yeah, this will happen one time and one time only, you know, when you get the opportunity to spend time with greatness like that, you know. Having known him for a long, long time, I can only say that I fell in love with him the second I met him, and I'm, you know, still in love with him to this day. His wife, Victoria, has proven herself beyond. I mean, she's a wonderful, wonderful partner for Shane. They're best friends, and I've seen that continue over these many years under all kinds of duress. But they're quite, it's really an interesting, fascinating life. I think I'm done now. Sorry.
Okay, we have another question.
Congratulations on the film, because I watched it yesterday and I didn't know about Shane's music, and I love Irish music, so it was a great discovery for me. And I wanted to ask Johnny and the director, what was the most important thing you guys wanted to let the audience know about Shane in the film, to discover his personality, who he is? Thanks.
I think we wanted to show like different sides to this persona. I mean, he's a very complex person, and you know, I think it was interesting when he refused to do interviews but would allow us to do conversations where he just talked with people that were interesting to him, because I think each of those conversations shows a different side. You know, with Jerry Adams, it's kind of almost like a school kid with the, you know, the commander there. With Johnny, it's like old mates, you know, a very relaxed, very humorous and engaged with Bobby Gillespie. He's a bit terrifying to Bobby. And these are all parts, you know, if you direct the guy, you know this as well, or you try and direct him because he doesn't want to be directed. These are all parts of him. The man is a kind of tragic hero, a difficult human being, but the most wonderful, warm, and creative,
funny,
generous person as well. You know, so if the film could capture a slight bit of that, that's what we wanted to put across. Hopefully, we did some of that.
To show his. Well, yeah, as Julian said, the depth of the man, and the very profoundly deep traveling that he does in his head and in his heart, you know. So to try to I mean, all of Shane's magic is all invisible, isn't it? I mean, it's sonic and it's visual. When you read the lyrics to his songs, you see what he's capable of, and it's so to be able to show that side of Shane, to show the other side of Shane that's still a kind of I was going to say naughty schoolboy, but he's beyond that. Christ, he's an irreverent. To show the sort of irreverent. I don't care what you think of me. Sort of lightness of Shane. He's not interested, certainly not in celebrity or anything like that. I think the important thing about Shane, all these sides of the man, all these facets, are important to understand how he got where he got. And to be honest, when I met him, you know, 35 years ago, roughly, everyone around me was saying, "Yeah, he won't be much longer. You know, he's probably going to die soon." Yeah, that's been 30-something years. He's still here. He's one of the funniest. I guess that's it, yeah, to show those sides, how biting he can be, how funny he could be. I guess the truth, the reality of Shane is in this, and that's what's really pleasing to me, is to be able to show this, this person who sort of, he's just a little bit further off the ground than at least I am. He floats a little, Shane, you know. Like they said about Muhammad Ali. Yeah, to have people experience these various things of Shane is, you know, that's what, I mean, he's, mm-hmm. I don't, whoever has seen the film or whoever hasn't seen the film, I doubt any one of us have ever, or any one of you have met someone exactly, I mean, like Shane, who can charm you within about a half a second and then dress you down completely and then make you feel like he wants to hold you and then, you know, the next thing he's pouring a beer over your head. It's an action film, is really what I'm trying to say. It's an action film.
Yes, a question at the back. The girl in blue, right at the back.
A question for whoever can answer it, really. Is there any anecdote that
that you wanted to put in the movie, but then you realized it was just too inappropriate or wild or something?
I think that's you.
Well, I mean, if it's not in the movie, we probably didn't want it to be talked about, actually. I don't think that we, you know, we were open to anything that really shed light on this journey. You know, it was not the easiest film to make, but you also have to understand that Shane is in a particular place now. It's not easy for him to get around. So we were waiting around sometimes for Shane, I'll put it that way. But, you know, I think everything we wanted in the film is in there. So I don't really want to talk about things that aren't in there.
During the process of making the film, of course, with any film, there's always, you always have these dilemmas or this is why we can't have this today, or that this guy can't come in, or you never know. On this one, Shane was every day was kind of a question mark. Is he gonna come in today? When he comes in, is he gonna stab me in the neck? Or is he going to be pleasant? Or, you know, he's a mercurial individual. So, weirdly, though,
it makes you think on your feet, that kind of thing. And you have to deal with it in ways you wouldn't have thought of otherwise.
Exactly what I was going to say. There are times when, for a filmmaker or an actor or whatever, but there are times when it's really, really good to be pushed to find yourself in the corner, you know, and having to fight your way out. So if you, let's say, we have this much footage of Shane, we're gonna make the best of this much footage, and then at that point, you're fighting your way out of the corner. So I suppose the film starts telling you, hey, I wanna be this, you know. So I think the film actually gained a lot from some of Shane's irreverent antics at times, you know. I think the film gained a lot by it.
Yeah, I mean, in a weird way, he was guiding it in a kind of, you know, with negative things, there's a positive thing.
Yeah.
And I think he's very aware of that. And I think it would have been if he'd sat down in front of a camera and done, you know, 2 days of talking, it wouldn't be as genuine and as real as all the little bits of sound we managed to find. And
but also, he, you know, just the fact that he, I mean, you got to expect that from Shane. He's never compromised in any way with anyone for anything, and he'll even go as far as to just be contrary, just because it's more fun. He did in a way, just by saying, I don't feel like it. I mean, I think that's the beauty of it. What you got was the truth. What you got was the truth from him, whether it was good or bad. You know, if he didn't want to talk to you, he'd, fuck off, fuck off, fuck off. You know, I mean, he's not. He's very shy. He's a very shy human being. He's a very shy man. But when his hackles are up, he can be like a viper. You know, don't tap the cobra.
Sí, tenemos aquí.
Yep, we've got another question up here.
Television, a question to Johnny Depp. Watching the film, I was reminded of your fascination with Hunter Thompson. It seems you have a great attraction for radical personalities.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
And at the same time, you're a Hollywood celebrity, and you work in the movie industry. How do you reconcile these two parts of your life? How do you get them together?
I mean, first thing, and the most important thing, is not to ever consider yourself a Hollywood celebrity. That's death. And it's grotesque. So we can strike that one out, but thanks. I've always been drawn to I've always been drawn to people who are diligent in remaining themselves. So a fascination with Hunter Thompson, you know, as a 15-year-old kid reading Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, suddenly turns into, you know, you wake up and you're 30 years old or something, and you're living in Hunter's basement for 3 months. So fascination becomes this amazing friendship and this amazing, strangely enough, a mentorship. He was everything, you know, to me. Like Marlon Brando, you know, was everything to me. A father, a friend, a brother, teacher, mentor, piss artist. I've also always been somewhat attracted to what is considered normal. That question: what is normal? You know, because people say, "Oh, Marlon Brando, crazy; Hunter Thompson, crazy; Shane McGowan, crazy; Keith Richards, crazy." Him, crazy. Maybe it's true. I don't know. Maybe you need to be. Maybe that's freedom. You know? But I am fascinated with people who have fought for the truth, their truth, you know, the real truth. And Hunter is as much that as, or Shane is as much that artist as Hunter was, and Marlon was, and Keith. All these great, wonderful people that I've been lucky enough to know. But Shane is right up there with Ginsberg and Walt Whitman and Brendan Behan, James Joy. I mean, for me, he's right there. I think I'm done now. Sorry.
Tenemos ahí.
We have another question there. Hi, Jose Manuel Romero from Cadena Ser. The film demonstrates the political and social and political implication of Shane for Johnny Depp. What's your implication and political implication in Donald Trump's United States nowadays?
My political
implication. And what's your political standpoint vis-a-vis Trump's United States? Your implication, politically speaking, given the situation now, you know, with the...
I think there's... it's a very, very strange time in the world, obviously. No need to speak the obvious. So, by reading as much as one can in the news to sort of form an opinion about what's going on. Well, there's really no way to form an opinion about exactly what's going on with COVID. There's no way to figure it out. But that's on the sort of global, like, let's get our shit together side. As far as politics, I enjoy comedy as much as the next guy, you know what I mean? I watch Trump speak and I laugh, and it's wonderful. It's good comedy. It's great comedy. But it's frightening comedy. So I don't really have any. No. I'm not so political in that way, especially in terms of the States. People are in, well, divide and conquer. Just a little. I don't know. People are in panic. People are being fed fear. So I don't give a fuck about politics. I would like to take the people out of fear and danger. I don't believe he's the one to do it. I don't think he's capable. I'm not sure he's capable of... I'm sure he's capable of going to the bathroom by himself and that stuff. I mean, I don't think about too much. I don't think of that. I don't think about that. But no, he must have an amazing sense of humor. He must. He has to. I think I'm done now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sí, tenemos aquí otra pregunta.
Yes, another question here.
Question is for Johnny and Julian. It's about the statement of Shane that he doesn't want to be called poet. Do you think there is any possibility to separate poetry and music, and what would be the best word to describe him?
Stubborn. Stubborn and contrary and irreverent. Because if someone said he wasn't a poet, he would fight and say, "What do you mean I'm not a poet?" If you call him a poet, he'll say, "I'm not a poet." If you say, "You're not a poet," he'll say, "Fuck you, I am a poet." You know. But I do understand, me personally, I understand what he's saying, because I think that if Shane in all his, because what he spews up is truth and from the depths of his being. For him to be called poet, I'm sure makes him feel very uncomfortable to be considered a poet by others. For example, people when they talk about me as an actor or the work I've done and stuff, they'll say, "So as an artist, what do you think of blah, blah, blah?" I mean, I'm dead in the water there. As soon as they say you as an artist, there's an internal grimace. I recoil in horror because I can't consider myself an artist at all, you know. Certainly not because of anything I've done in cinema. I think you can approach your work as an artist or to try to deliver something that's interesting. And that's really the focus, is that journey and not the label or the result. The journey is what's important. And not the result, you know. So I think that's probably what makes Shane deny himself the title of poet. But he's wrong.
Julian, do you want to add anything to that?
Said it pretty good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tenemos una ya.
Okay, we've got time for one final question here in the second row, it seems.
Good morning, Johnny. Could you tell us something? Yeah. Good morning, Johnny. Could you tell us something about the Basque Country, about San Sebastian? Do you know it? Do you like it? Eskerrik asko. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I have been here before. I have spent a little time in Basque Country. And it's it's one of my the places that I've been able to, unfortunately, explore the least in terms of Spain. But in San Sebastian, I was here, like, I said to the lady from the festival, I was talking to this woman from the festival last night, and I said, man, it seems like it's been a long time since I've been here, like 10 years or something. She said, 20. But I have very fond memories of this place, and I'm obsessed with the what's it called? Chaco? No, the green vino.
Chacoli.
How do you say it?
Chacoli.
I'm obsessed with it. That's the green stuff, right? You pour in bubbles and stuff. Yeah, it's a celebration. Exactly. Yeah. No, just the very thought of doing that makes it circus-like, you know. Suddenly, it's fun. Yeah, no, I'm so happy to finally be back here, and this festival has always meant a lot to real cinema, you know, to cinema. It's been very true to its roots. This festival, and of all of the film festivals that do happen, it commends you after being in the business and attending these things for the last 175 years. This festival in San Sebastian has always been the smallest, tiniest amount of let's just call them Hollywood types. What I feel here in San Sebastian is truly a festival that's about cinema, it's about the filmmakers, it's about the people. People who work on it, make these films and get them made, which is miraculous in any case. And not so hung up on, I don't know, the kind of goofy sensationalist side of it, you know. So there's a great respect for cinema here. I don't watch movies myself, but I do like, I like documentaries. People don't act in documentaries. Thanks, John. Thank you.
Gracias.
Thank you. Okay, we have to finish here. I just want to thank the presence here in San Sebastian of the three of you. I hope that you enjoy the festival this time as well, and best of luck with the premiere of the film.